forest, right? An adult man blessed with a heart suspended as a child's heart. And he puts it in his Curious George book. You know? I love it. It's just this heart of a child, right? Just seeing. For us, if that feather were to float to your feet, you'd probably go, ooh, maybe it has a disease or something gross, right? But to him, it's this precious, you know, gift, right? Last week, we began talking about the heart. And we're continuing on that track. We talked about this romance that has come to us throughout our lives. Moments in our lives that felt almost magical. Moments where there's this sense that more is going on here than meets the eye. Right? Where heaven and earth seem to come together. Not necessarily the Kodak moments of your life. Not necessarily like your wedding day or the birth of your, you know, child. Right? Because the romance usually takes us by surprise. It's when you're hiking in the woods and it seems like heaven and earth come together. Beauty and mystery come together, right? And they hit us in this place where you have this sense that this place is like a fairy tale. Was I made for a fairy tale? Right? And I shared last week about how when I was, you know, 11, 12 years old, I saw Star Wars in this scene where Obi-Wan is calling Luke up to a great adventure, right? And how this was sort of this moment for me where it was like that invitation to a dangerous adventure. I wanted to be Luke so badly, right? I had the sense that I was made to rush off and rescue the princess. I was made for some sort of dangerous adventure. I was made to face Darth Vader. Oh yeah. You know, and the romance comes to us in other ways as well. It shows up in our desires, right? Our longing to be known. Right? Don't you want to be known? You know, really known for who you really are and enjoyed. Our longing to be truly seen, right? Our longing to be part of something big, something important, to make a difference. There's this sense, this romance, that someone, something is calling me up and into something important. And the romance says there is more than the life you are living. There's more going on than meets the eye. Right? And I think we would search all our lives to find out what that is. What is the more? What is the purpose? What is this thing that's calling me up? Who is calling to me and to what? I think we'd search for that all of our lives if it weren't for the other messages that have come to us. The messages of the arrows. That's a pretty wicked looking arrow, isn't it? I got the most wild looking one I could find. Simone Weil said, there are two things that pierce the human heart, beauty and affliction. When I was 6 years old, my parents divorced when I was 4 and a half, and I lived with my dad for about 6 months, and I went to live with my mom when I was six, and she could barely afford any place to live. She worked as a nurse's aide, and so she actually rented a garage from a man that he had this garage behind his house, and part of her rent was she was renovating it. My mom could do a lot of things. She was renovating this garage to be an apartment. And I remember just being a little kid, and there's just no food. I mean, it was on the other side of the tracks, all right? And in our town, the tracks literally separated middle class to lower income. And I was the only white kid in my neighborhood. I don't say that as a, you know, racist or prejudice thing. It's just a fact. I was the only white kid, and they didn't take to me very well. And so I remember just, you know, I'd go out, you know, and the kids would be playing in the front yard of the houses next door, and I, you know, playing catch, you know, softball or whatever. And I'd go out with my mitt, you know, and it's like, can I play? And they were like, no, you can't play with us. You know, and they'd be playing kickball, you know, and I'd go out there, can I play? No, you can't play with us. And there were some mean kids. I mean, they'd bust the spokes out of my bike wheels and stuff. And one day my mom said, hey, you know, come in. And she goes to the freezer and she pulls out a box of ice cream sandwiches. And she says, there was about 10, 15 kids playing in the backyard next door. There's a broken down old fence between the garage we lived in and this backyard. And these kids were all playing and running around in it. And she said, why don't you take these ice creams for a sort of a friendship offering? Now, can you see where this is going? You know, I walked back there. I went through the hole, you know, and I'm like, hey, well, did you guys like an ice cream? And it was like a pod of piranhas, you know, coming and taking a bite out of the wounded fish, you know. And it was like, you know, and all of them were gone. All of the ice creams were gone, and they were out the gate, out front yard, and out in the neighborhood. And I'm standing there holding my box. You know? Yeah, it was lame. You know, and the message was, you are really on your own. You're alone. And nothing about you is wanted. Last week, my daughter was at the keyboard, and she was sharing about how she had sort of gave up Facebook and texting for God last week. She felt like God was leading her to that. And just this deep sense of aloneness that she experienced from that. Remember her sharing that? I felt that same thing, a desperation standing there with my box, empty box of ice cream sandwiches. There's a powerful longing in us for friendship, isn't there? For connection. Don't you want a friend who really loves you, who sticks with you? A friend who, someone who sees the same things that your heart sees. Aren't those people rare? You know, a guy that you can connect with, men, that is just there, or a gal, ladies, a sister who knows you, believes in you, loves you, isn't going to leave. Does anything about those sentences bring up pain for you? I see it in your faces. The longing screams for friend. The longing in us for friendship screams, that's what I'm made for. I know that's what I'm made for. That's got to be part of the romance. That's got to be part of the story, right? But the arrows come and say, no, you can't have that. Yeah, that's not available. You're alone. You're not wanted. And our hearts have to deal with both messages. And we face this battle, right? Should I live in hopeful abandon, right? Should I live in hope that there is this larger story and the ending is good? Or do I just close myself off to friendship altogether and just not open that part of my heart up? Right? Do I let desire and hope for friendship arrive and have a voice in my life and in my heart? Or do I live with that part of my heart? Or do I cut out that part of my heart and throw it away? Which do you do? When an arrow pierces our heart, a shift takes place. It goes something like this. You know, here I am holding the box of ice cream sandwiches, right? And the shift goes something like this. I know how to not experience that kind of pain again. I'll never show up with a box again. Right? I'll never arrive with that kind of offer again. Right? I won't open myself up to it. Not really. There's a man in his 50s that I spoke with about 6 years ago, and I remember we were talking to friendship. The idea of friendship came up, and this man said, yeah, I don't open myself up to that anymore. I mean, he just literally said that sentence. I said, why? And he said, well, I had the two closest friends a man could ever have in his life in college. And we got done with college and everybody moved away and moved on, and I'm not going to open myself up to that again. Right? What had happened for him? He experienced the loss of these friendships as deep pain, deep loss. It was so precious to him, right? He just took the arrow that was in his chest and he shoved it straight through, right? I'll never open myself up to desire again. Good morning. Welcome to Adventure Church. Buddhism tells us that we have we experience pain because we desire. And so because we want things, and when we don't get what we want, we experience pain. So the answer is learn to not desire, right? Become Mr. Spock, right? I will want nothing, so nothing can ever be taken away from me. How many of us live as functional Buddhists? Right? I mean, what do you really want anymore in your life anyway? Your assignment last week was to journal every day and ask the question, what do I really want? Did any of you do that? Did some of you do that? Some of you did. Did any of you experience disappointment by asking that question? I mean, if you start asking what you want, what's going to come up is disappointment after disappointment, right? The effect of the arrows is that the arrows come to us and they land in our hearts and we think, I know how not to never feel that again. I'll avoid involvement in this. Or I will never want that again. Or I'll always leave first before I get hurt, right? I'll never take responsibility again where I could fail. I'll avoid responsibility, right? Proverbs 4:23, above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring. Above all else. To avoid pain, we create a system to never feel that pain again. Never be put in that situation again. Through our system, we harden or deny our hearts, and we find a story to live in that protects us. No matter how nice your system is, no matter how other-centered it may look, your system always ultimately serves you and it saves you. Frederick Buechner said, and this is from last week, our original shimmering self, like that Forrest Gump heart, that part of us is free. It gets buried so deeply we hardly live out of it at all. Rather, we learn to live out of all the other cells which we put on and take off constantly against the world's weather. Debbie and we got married, I finished college, Bible college, and I was in seminary, first year of seminary. Debbie and I got married, and I went off to be a youth pastor, my first full-time job in ministry. And we had dreams. It was going to be awesome. It was going to be wonderful. We were going to change the world for Jesus, right? And I went to this church in Hillsboro, Oregon, and became the youth pastor, and it was going just like the romance said it would. I mean, kids were coming to Christ, and in fact, 6 months into it, the board called me into a meeting, right? And they said, you are doing such an incredible job, Randy. We want to give you a raise mid-year. We realize what we have in you, and we're not paying you enough. And I went, all right, thank you, you know? And I walked away like 10 feet tall, you know, and I kept at it. But about a few weeks after that, the pastor and I had a little butting of heads on a topic. And I remember writing him it was one of those agree to disagree. And I remember I wrote him a note and put it in his box and said, hey, we need to talk about this because it's not okay that we disagree on this. And then a week went by, nothing. I wrote him another note, put it in there. And no response. And this growing tension began to build. Now, during that 6 months, my health started to fall apart. My thyroid gland had died. Because I got a cold or a virus or something, and it just killed my thyroid gland. And so I didn't know it at the time. I just felt depressed and actually really kind of weird. Couldn't think clearly, had all kinds of physical problems. And I think the week that the board invited me back and without warning said, we're letting you go. Actually, we're demanding that you turn in your resignation. No warning. That week, our engine blew up in our car. So my body's falling apart. Engine blew up in our car. And they fired me. I had spent about $60,000 in college and beginning graduate school. My career path was clear. The romance was telling me this is what I'm meant to do. And it seemed like God went, no. I mean, I can't tell you. Walking back home, there's no car, from that being fired, the Randy you'd have seen was just head down, you know, in humiliation, in defeat. Had to go to Debbie's parents and say, can we live with you? Now, you're married to, guys, you're married to your wife 1 year, and you're going to her parents for a place to live. Can you feel me here? You know what I'm saying? Guys, where's that hit you? Right? Yeah. Sometimes it's one decisive arrow that hits you, and the moment this topic comes up, you know immediately when that happened to you. Do you? For others of you, it's like a volley of arrows that block out the sun. You remember when they came. That's what it felt like to me. It wasn't one arrow. It was like the sky was darkened by them. And for others of you, it's just the slow accumulation of 1,000 tiny stabs. But the result's the same. The result is loss of heart. The romance seems to promise a life of wholeness and adventure and love and beauty and connection through deep connection with the great heart behind all of this, right? But the arrows deny it, telling us you're on your own. There is no great heart. There's no one strong behind this. No one calling you up to venture. The arrows mock. You know, this world's a benevolent place. Disaster's just around the corner. Right? Have you heard those two messages? You heard, there are the messages that reside deep, 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 deep down. Before we sort of filter them through our editors, right? So today we're talking about the arrows and their effect. And you may be going, please no. I don't want to talk about this, right? Because it brings up the past, it brings up pain. Trust me. Wonderful things are ahead. Truly amazing vistas await your heart. But there is no way around this valley. If you want to get your heart back, you want to have it come fully alive, you have to look at how your heart has experienced the assault and what your heart has done with the blows that you've taken. Because your heart is the wellspring of life. Last week we've talked about the fact that you've had this external journey that you've been on, but you've also had this internal journey that your heart's been on. And your heart has interpreted the romance as your experiences have come by and the feather has come to your feet. And your heart has interpreted those moments, but it's also interpreted those arrows, right? The arrows you've taken. And that's where your deepest convictions are formed. Like my friend who wouldn't open himself up to friendship anymore, right? Losing his college buddies. The convictions are written, follow me here, kind of like the convictions are written in wet cement that you pave over the wellspring to try to protect it. And it hardens over your heart. And then you find yourself with a loss of heart. And you wonder, where's the passion gone? Why have I become so cynical? Why have I become so hard, so angry? so lost. So Lieutenant Dan Taylor in Forrest Gump, right? He's experienced the romance. I mean, he grew up, right, knowing where the romance was leading him. He knew it from a very young age, as many men think, that the longings of their soul to find glory and adventure and beauty are to be satisfied in the military. Right? And Dan, grew up going, I know, I'm going to follow my ancestors' footsteps. He goes to the academy. He goes to officer's training school. Right? Dan is to become a military man. Right? He came from a long line of officers who gave their lives in service to their country. And he was convinced that he would either become a war hero or he would give his life on the battlefield and therefore be remembered with his ancestors, right? With that sense of lasting glory. And in the scene we're going to look at here, the mortar shell takes his legs. And we're not going to show you that part, but... and he goes, basically he says, okay, well, my plan B is still going to work. I am going to give my life for my country. But God disrupts his plan. Let's watch this.
Real lucky.
Forrest saves his life. God disrupts his plan, his system. Same thing, right? And the denial of his plan lands in Lieutenant Dan's heart like an arrow in his chest, right? And the wound comes, the arrow comes, and it comes with a message. And in this case, the message is, you're a freak. You're a cripple, right? And the arrows have come to you with messages as well. You're stupid. You don't fit. Something's wrong with you. This world is a dark and brutal place. You really are alone, right? No one is watching out for you. Or bad things always happen to you, right? And those messages come, and our hearts don't know what to do with the arrow, the message that comes with the arrow, and it causes a shift down in our soul, right? Like I said, with the ice cream boxes, I will never offer my box again, right? Commitments come to never be put in that position again, to never know that kind of pain again, which results in a self-protective approach to life. With the loss and the pain, we turn to a gallery of popular options. Okay, throughout the film, Lieutenant Dan tries most of them, right? And the first, and I think this one might be the most popular, is victim. Okay, to avoid pain, we find a story to live in that protects us. No matter how nice your system, it always serves and saves who? You. You may look other-centered, but it isn't, right? Victim, why does everything go wrong with me? This particular plan relieves us from having to take real responsibility for our lives. Victims demand to be understood, but don't dare require anything of them. Blame is their comforter. They hurt me, so I'm justified to self-soothe and stay stuck. You know anybody like that? Are you one of them? Victim is the most popular. I mean, it's amazing. I've been hurt by someone, so no one should expect me to engage and take responsibility for myself. I'm justified to live in self-pity, comforting my own soul with blame. You do that? I do. I have. Victims and self-pity is a way to justify not re-engaging with my heart. Right? I deserve to check out. I deserve to focus on myself rather than loving you. Right? So, Lieutenant Dan, first he blames Forrest, and then he blames God. And then he tries another very popular option, self-destruction. Okay? If I get better, I'll have to be responsible for myself. Okay? It's amazing. This one says, it's designed to avoid responsibility by keeping expectations low. If I'm a screw-up, I won't have to face much being required of me. Right? And besides, you're going to bail me out anyway. Ever know anybody like this? It's interesting. It's like people see... I see this one, you know, working with people over the years. They seem to make a level of progress, and then they run off to Vegas and blow everything. You know, they flush their progress down the toilet. It's interesting. It's a system, right? If I'm a screw-up, I won't have to face very much being required of me, right? Sometimes it can... Self-sabotagers... Lieutenant Dan's case, he spends all of his disability pay on booze and prostitutes, right? And basically he just destroys himself, right? Motivated by this. self-destructive people, sabotagers, self-sabotagers, they can even think of ending their own life. Become suicidal, right? It looks like sadness and escape, but what it really is about control and punishing those who've hurt us. Usually a vain attempt to punish God. Right? So that's what's going on with that. Most of us think of God as like those Mesopotamian household gods of Jacob's day. Yeah, remember Jacob and need some air? Or need less air. Thank you. Do you remember Jacob goes up to his uncle Laban's, marries Rachel and Leah, stays there so many years, and then he wants to go back to Canaan, right? And Rachel steals her father's household gods. Remember that? See, most of us think of God like a Mesopotamian household god of that day. You know, and the way the Mesopotamian household god works is we give the god what he wants, right? And sacrifice, worship, whatever, and he's supposed to do his part next, right? He's supposed to give us bountiful crops, healthy children, make things work, and some core part of our heart is convinced that life would flow along more smoothly if God were just a little bit more like those Mesopotamian household gods. You know? But the truth is, the real God knows that we all come into this world with a predilection to live our lives on our own terms. And according to our own understanding, just like Lieutenant Dan. And when the God doesn't cooperate, like he doesn't with Lieutenant Dan, we can get downright angry with those Mesopotamian household gods. You know? But the real God doesn't seem to respond to our anger with better service. Does he? You know, and so, you know, he seems to be interested in something else. What? We don't know. Right? But he seems to be after something else. And during those times, God can seem like he's actually behind the arrows. That he's maybe the one drawing the bow himself. Right? So back to Lieutenant Dan. A few years go by, and Forrest buys a shrimpin' boat. And in honor of his dead friend Bubba that we saw in the clip there, right? And then Lieutenant Dan, not having any place to go, shows up. Right, and he's going to be his first mate. And after several attempts to get shrimp, Lieutenant Dan says, "Well, why don't you pray for shrimp?" Right, and so Forrest does, and Lieutenant Dan actually even shows up at church sometimes, and he's down in some whiskey in the back, waiting for Forrest to appease the uncooperative household god, right, and things don't go any better, and you get this scene. Nope. let's keep it rolling here. Here's another scene I want you to see. we rage at God like Lucinda. Now, you know what? For a lot of us, we don't rage at God because we're not honest. We're afraid to. But something in us really relates to this, you know, defiance. Rage at God because we feel like He's not only unconcerned with our plight, but He's actually working against us. And sometimes, we're right. Right? The story of Lieutenant Dan is a poignant picture of God's fierce intentions to use both crippling and blessing to cause us to abandon our systems to make life work on our terms apart from God. God will use crippling and blessing to cause us to abandon our systems to make life work on our terms apart from God. So you've got Jacob, who's leapt upon by some man in the night, and his hip is wrenched, so from then on he walks with a limp, and that man is God. And you've got Jonah, who... right, is swallowed by a whale and then given the comfort of a vine to shade him, and then God takes away the vine on purpose. Why would God leap and make someone lame? Why would he take away their comfort or their vine? Well, in Jacob's case, he was living through deception. He was living through deception, manipulation, and control. Jonah, through prejudice and blame, right? Listen to me here, avoidance, not trust in God's leadership, held Jonah's hand and was his comforter. The way of God's redemption can leave us trembling and fearful, right? Because God comes and leaps on Jacob, right? And no more fast-moving Jacob. And God disrupts Jonah's system of isolation, bringing a mission and then a fish, taking away his comfort. And then at the end of the book of Jonah, God says this: "You're upset because I took away your comfort. Yet there's 150,000 people here who don't know their right hand from their left. There's a larger story going on. And I need you to be about this larger story and not your small one." Right? Join me on my larger story. Abandon your smaller one. But we hold on to our systems like a drowning man holds on to a lifeguard. Right? Actually, I spoke with there's a guy in our church that was a rescue diver. And he said, you know, sometimes when you go to rescue people, they're so panicky, they'll actually kill you. You have to sometimes hold them and render them unconscious before you can save them. And sometimes God has to do the same thing. We hold on to our systems with a death grip. We don't want to let them go. Right? Another system that we have is, let me get the flashy thing back here, is self-reproach. If I'm bad and I am the problem, then I have hope. How does that fit? How could that work? Right? Why? Because I can change me. You see this with people who have experienced sexual abuse. This system is designed to never face the conclusion that I was simply not loved. If I was selfishly used, hurt, abused, I will blame myself. You know, it was because I was too sensual, too something, too bad, because I don't want to face a world that could be so unsafe that I could be hurt that badly without provocation. I don't want the world where I wasn't loved, where I was hurt that badly. That's terrifying. So it must be my fault. So I'll take it on me because I can control that. Right, I can change. Another one is arranging and controlling. I can control my world, and I can create an island of safety. I just learned through this preparation for this week of a major system that I've been working for a long time, and I'm going to confess it to you right now. I was fired from that job and experienced the crashing of my world because of a tension that was there that in my naivete I went, well, we're in the church and this is God's kingdom, and so there's no way anything really bad could happen. This pastor and I, it'll work out, right? And that naivete crashed my world. Make sense? So guess what system I developed? Those of you who know me will nod your head. If there is a possible tension between you and I, and you have any role or position that could crash my world, guess what I'll do? I will not waste a second. Dude, are we okay? Is everything okay? How are we doing? How are you doing? Mark's nodding. He's like, oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, I will rush in. I will be on the phone. I will not let a minute go by. Is that love? It looks like love. Mark, I'm really, bro, I wanted to see how you're doing. How did that go? Are we good? Is everything, what am I really doing? I'm saving my world. It's a selfish, self-centered, self-focused approach to life, but it looks really Christian. I'm saving my own world. How do you save yours? Avoidance. Let's look at some control options here, okay? When you're controlling, your island tends to get smaller and smaller, okay? I will always avoid involvement in organized religion because I was hurt in it. That's control. I will keep my mouth shut because when I opened it, I got hurt. I will avoid or run the difficult conversation. I'll avoid the difficult conversation or I'm running it. Okay? I will talk all the time and never ask you to share. Because if you share, I won't know what to do with that. I will be so nice that you could never be angry with me again, you know? I will be the nicest, sweetest person you have ever met. I'll never tell you what I really think. Okay? Or I will be fragile. I will come off as I gotta find my notes here. We portray ourselves as fragile to keep the pressure off of taking any responsibility. So basically the idea is, I'm really fragile. I could fall apart in a moment. So don't upset the apple cart, right? Which requires everybody around me to walk on their tippy toes. We are not fragile. We're made of tough stuff because we're in the image of God. But we actually convince ourselves that we are. And that's about control. It's you're holding on to your little life preserver. Okay? Cynicism is control. Right? What's cynicism? It's expect the worst and only see the dark side of things. Are you cynical? How does that serve you? Well, let me tell you how it serves you. Basically, if there is a good side, if there is something beautiful and wonderful going on, then I have to engage it with my heart. I'm responsible to engage it with my heart, but I don't have access to my heart. So how could I ever arrive? So I'll decide that nothing good is really going on. And I'll see only the negative side of everything. Because if there's a really good side, then I have to engage it. Cynicism serves you. It's your own little system. So let me ask you, what is your wound? What is the arrow that you've taken? And what system did it create that you're operating out of right now? What is your plan of salvation? Because you can't live from your heart, you can't find God when you are self-protecting and hanging on to another lifeline other than Him. Give you a little picture here to help you understand. This is you up on the cliff of safety that you've created, your plan of salvation. It may look like, I'm tough, I don't need anyone, I'm an island. I'll keep people at a distance. I'll appear strong because I'll never admit to needing anyone. And at times I feel like I really don't. Or maybe it's, I'll be so sweet and kind, no one would ever hurt me or reject me. I'll be careful to never do anything that could upset you. Or maybe it's the next one, if I'm seen as one of the spiritual leaders, I'll never face rejection. I'll be wanted for my leadership. Maybe it's, if I present myself as things are great all the time, I'm on top of it, then I won't be exposed as needy by others. If I say little, I can avoid the possibility of looking like a fool, being rejected, or getting into a situation I can't handle. I'll just stay in the background. If I always come through, you will need me. Even if you don't like me, you will keep me around. I mean, there's hundreds of these, right? And this is your cliff of safety you have built. It is your plan of salvation. And God is here, and this is God's love, this rope. but it's hanging limp. It's not carrying your weight because you're not trusting it, you're trusting this. And let me tell you, the leap from here to here is sheer terror. Telling you that my system is, Mark, how's it going? Are we okay? Is jumping off that for me. Because I can't turn to it now because you're going to go, you're doing that, right? I know. I can't do that. Abandoning our system is critical to finding God. But let me say this in closing. Why would you abandon your system if you really aren't convinced that He cares about you anyway? Because deep at the root of how even the most spiritual person in this room is that question. Come back next week to find out why you can trust Him. So let me pray and let you go. Jesus, this is, I know it seems complicated, Lord, but you see how simple it is. You are about so much more in us than us attending church and us being moral people. You want our hearts. You want to restore them. You want to set them free, and you want us to find you with them. But Lord, we can't do that when there's a thick layer or many layers of concrete poured over the wellspring. And Lord, so you have to come and jackhammer it out. And Lord, I pray that we would see that your intentions are good, even though they can be painful. And they're what we need, even though we might not want them at the time. Jesus, we pray that you would bring life, that you would show us in the coming week and in the weeks to come that we really, really can trust your heart. And Jesus, we pray that you would give us the strength and the courage to abandon our system, to jump off our cliff. Lord, come into this, and we ask that you would continue just to awaken our hearts, Lord. I want my heart back fully. I want my heart fully alive. So, Lord, would you do the work that's required to make that happen? In Jesus' name we pray.